You're listening to the Meet the Farmers podcast with me, your host, Ben Eagle. For previous episodes, visit thinkingcountry.com or find the podcast on iTunes or SoundCloud by searching for Meet the Farmers.
Hello and welcome to this special episode of Meet the Farmers. This is the last episode of this mini-series in which we're discussing changes that might be afoot for the dairy sector and the influences on it at the moment. So far, I've talked to Matt Swain about change in general and what happens when people undergo the pressures of change, then to John Allen and Jude Kappa about the dairy sector specifically, delving into environmental and climate policy and the influence of changing diets and alternative products, among other things. And today, I'm really glad to be speaking to Kerry Waters, who is a vegan and a spokesperson for Animal Rebellion. Kerry is actually the political and research lead for Animal Rebellion. Animal Rebellion undertook a sit-in at Smithfield Market back in October, and their aim is for us to move towards a plant-based food system. I should say that Kerry is speaking in a personal capacity. We're going to focus principally on the influence of the animal rights movement and how animal justice and the broader environmental and climate movements could impact on dairy over the next 10 years or so. Kerry, thank you for talking to me.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Okay, so you're currently in Portugal, which is a personal record for me, is the longest distance interview I think I've done. And I hope that the internet connection stays strong. We've been lucky so far.
Yes, I hope there's no noise as well.
Can you just start by giving listeners some context as to who Animal Rebellion are and how you first got involved with them?
Okay, so Animal Rebellion are a group of just ordinary people who want to end animal agriculture, transition to a plant-based food system to avert climate breakdown. We've all seen the protests from Extinction Rebellion, and Animal Rebellion was a group of people from XR who decided that there was a space to start talking about the impact of animals and raising animals on the environment and greenhouse gas emissions. So Animal Rebellion started in June last year, just a small group of people, and it sort of exploded. And during October, we took part in the October Rebellion, as you said before, which involved the sit-in at Smithfield, where we had a range of different actions to highlight the different aspects of animal agriculture and what impact that has on the environment. And personally, I got involved because I was involved with other activism before, animal activism, but I wasn't really deep into it. I'm quite new to the activist circle, so to speak. And when I joined XR, which was last year, I realised just how this is just a group of normal people. They're not really activists in a way, just people very concerned about the situation and about the climate emergency. So when Animal Rebellion started, I thought, wow, this is perfect for me. This is just what I have experience in and what I'm passionate about.
Yeah. And you're vegan yourself.
Yes.
How long have you been vegan, and what are the reasons for you personally, if you're okay to talk about that?
Yeah, sure, no problem. So I've been vegan for about 5 years now. When I was growing up, I was vegetarian until about the age of 18. And then I just slipped into eating meat, but I never really liked the thought of having meat, an animal, eating an animal. I love the taste of meat, I have to say. I think most vegans do like the taste of meat.
Yeah.
The problem we have is with the fact that an animal has to die for that. And in the last few years, there have been so many great advances in vegan products, availability, nutritional content of these products, that really there's no reason, in my opinion, to be eating animal products anymore.
So what are we talking about when we say animal justice? What does that mean?
Well, animal justice is a term we use to say, to speak about the need for animals to be able to have the right to life, to be able to have the right to have the conditions to express their natural behaviours, and to not be persecuted and exploited for our use as sentient beings.
Why does Animal Rebellion see the UK dairy sector specifically as something that needs to change? Are we talking about change in this episode generally?
It's not just UK dairy. I think it's dairy globally. when we're talking about the change is already happening. When we look at the statistics, dairy is in decline throughout the world. The amount of dairy farmers, I think last year was around about 30 to 33 dairy farmers went out of business in the UK. This change is already underway. And Animal Rebellion see the dairy sector, just like the meat sector, as net contributors to climate change. If you think about the global greenhouse gas emissions for the in the agricultural sector entirely, which 14.5% is the lowest estimate, 4% of that is the dairy sector.
I want to talk about Veganuary. Veganuary, I'm going to say that again.
Difficult to say, isn't it?
It is. It finished, we're on the 11th of February today, day of recording, so it didn't finish too long ago. Did you take part in Veganuary as a campaigner, and do you actively try to encourage others to become vegan?
Well, I used to. From an Animal Rebellion stance, we don't actually tell people to go vegan. We think that the problem isn't individuals. The problem is the actual industry itself. So unless we change the status quo, unless we change these industries, and unless we stop supermarkets from being able to provide these products at lower prices than plant-based products, then we don't think that it's actually going to make much of a difference. It's going to take a very long time to turn the whole world vegan individual by individual. So that's why we don't promote go vegan message. But Veganuary has been a great way to get the message out there in the public. And a lot of people who do Veganuary see the benefits and continue.
How do you see February dairy?
It's interesting. I can understand why the dairy industry would want to do something to promote themselves after, straight after Veganuary. The reason why is because I think that the dairy industry is almost backed into a corner. They know that they have a huge environmental impact. And I have to admit that a lot of farmers are doing the best they can. They are aware of the environmental impact. They are doing everything they can to try and become more sustainable. But there's a certain limit. Dairy itself inherently is always going to be much more of a polluter, much more of an emitter of greenhouse gases than a plant-based system. So I can understand why the dairy sector is coming back with these campaigns, who's trying to promote something, because they're trying to promote maintaining the status quo. And it's interesting that this series is about change. Change is scary. And I think February is a great example of just how scared the sector is.
Okay, that's an interesting point. I mean, if we assume that the animal rights movement is a grassroots movement, there certainly seems to be a growing amount of noise on the ground over the last few years. But I'm really interested in your opinion of how organised it is as a movement, or assuming it is a movement, in your opinion. And is it actually enacting change on the ground?
Well, I think the term animal rights is a real broad term for a lot of different groups who have a lot of different ideas of what that entails. If we're talking about people who are interested in animal welfare, who have gone vegan, I think that it is definitely a growing movement. We're talking about people who are actual activists that get out there in the streets and do things every single week. I think that's a much smaller, but a very, very organised and very passionate group of people.
Mm. Can you give some examples of your engagement with farmers and people involved in other parts of the dairy sector? I'm interested in the kinds of conversations that you're having with farmers.
Yeah, sure. So Animal Rebellion are very concerned about the situation of farmers. I would say that actually that's sort of one of our number one concerns, is that as this change is happening, as we are moving towards a more plant-based food system, it's clear that the government is going to leave farmers behind. Farmers need help to be able to transition. Brexit is a great opportunity. The new agricultural bill that's coming in should be there to help farmers, the community, to move into these different ways of providing food. The problem is that the agricultural bill itself is quite wishy-washy. It doesn't set out any concrete examples of how it's going to do this. So as we can see that the market is shifting towards more plant-based options, farmers are in a situation where they are not incentivized to be able to make the transition. And it's not just a transition by doing it financially, also psychologically as well. I think rural communities are not given the help and the support that they need by the government. And we're really concerned and we really want to take farmers with us. We don't see them as our enemy. We don't want that divide. We are here to be able to help them to move to a plant-based food system, which in the end will be better for them, be better financially, it will be better for the environment, and it will be better for the animals.
Are you able to give any specific examples with, say, individual farmers that either you or your colleagues have had?
Yes, so we have a great example of a dairy company, actually, Elmhurst Dairy, who transitioned to 100% plant milk in 2016. And they had been producing dairy milk for over a century. And the reason why, and it's quite interesting, is they cited the economic considerations. It wasn't just the environmental concerns and the animal welfare concerns. They quite clearly recognise that the change that's happening in the dairy industry, and it's just simply not profitable. And when you look at how the demand for plant-based milk is skyrocketing, so the young people are drinking a lot more plant-based milks, and most of cow's milk is consumed by the older generations. So this change, although it may be slow at the moment, it's still moving in that direction. And Elmhurst Dairy saw this and they switched to 100% plant-based. We also have some great examples of individual farmers as well who have seen that there needs to be a transition. And for example, the Vegan Society has a great scheme, the Grow Green scheme, that helps farmers to make that transition. Mm-hmm. But, and I have to add, the government can be doing so much more. And that's one of our driving forces, especially in political, which I'm the lead of, that we want the government to be providing the support that farmers need.
That leads us in quite nicely actually to my next question, which is about conversations with policymakers. Are you speaking mm-hmm. directly with policymakers?
Well, we try. they're not that easy to get hold of, and politics is a very difficult thing to talk about. We follow the same three demands as Extinction Rebellion. So the third demand, which is beyond politics, so we don't play a part in party politics. We believe fundamentally that there needs to be a systemic change, just like there needs to be a systemic change in the food system overall. There needs to be a systemic change in how we act as a society. So although we try to engage policymakers as much as we can, there has always been this resistance, especially when it's something to do with animal rights, for example, in actually making any real change. One of the problems we've had recently is that the Climate Change Assembly, the government's yep. initiative to actually have a sort of citizens assembly, as their spokesperson for agriculture was the NFU. Now, the NFU are traditionally, they've been very, very they really want to avoid any sort of scenario where they're talking about introducing more plant-based options or going plant-based. So we've got a government who is only listening to their own echo chamber. And I think that to go forward, and this is what we're doing at Animal Rebellion, we're trying to engage individual MPs on their own personal terms to try and get them to see that this change is needed, and this change is really something that's happening independently of politics, independently of the industry itself. This is just happening. And unless we get behind it and start doing something to help each other, to pull each other up in solidarity instead of just leaving people behind, then I think that it's going to cause a huge amount of issues. We've seen the same thing happening with climate change.
What sort of reception are you getting from those MPs?
Well, we are having the same sort of reception. They are very polite. I've had a few conversations. At the moment, it seems that most MPs are very busy with Brexit. Yeah. To be thinking about anything else. We are quite interested in what's going to happen in March. So there's the Farming for the Future conference, and we will have someone representing Animal Rebellion who can go along and network. And hopefully then the Farming for the Future conference will be a place where DEFRA and the RSPCA are invited. It should be a place where we should be talking about the possibility of a plant-based food system and what that will mean for our greenhouse gas emissions. That would be the ideal situation. But we all know it's about money rather than about what's sensible.
What's your impression of how the mainstream media portrays the subject of animal rights?
It's interesting. I think it's not entirely the media's fault, but animal rights have been ridiculed in many senses as quite extreme. We've seen the way that the media portrays environmental activists. Anyone who wants to try and talk about what the problems are instantly called hypocrites. It's really hard to get away from how you're being portrayed, the narrative that's going on. That's why Animal Rebellion is so important, because the way that we've come along is to think about how we engage with people. We meet people where they are. We don't create this divide of us versus them, which is what the media really want to portray.
Because again, I mean, on that subject of us versus them, and turning to social media, and I'm not referring to Animal Rebellion at all here, but there have been in some circles some pretty questionable actions, some pretty questionable words on both sides. And I know personally of quite a few farmers who have been threatened and their families threatened. Are animal rights social media campaigns and engagement useful, therefore, or are they a hindrance that actually just causes division and hate?
I think they can be useful if they're done in a way that has understanding, dare I say it, love for everyone, for each other, and respect. Personally, I really can't stand it when we call farmers murderers, for instance. This is not an intentional act of killing that they want to do.
Or rapists is a common one as well.
Exactly. We have to admit that we live in a society that allows these things, that it's lawful, it's what's always been done and it's tradition. And to come along and to call someone a murderer is never going to get them sitting down and having a reasonable discussion with you. The problem with social media is that it itself is designed to cause these divisions. The reason why it's successful, Facebook's algorithms, the reason why they work is because it causes arguments and division. Mm-hmm. I think that when it comes to the use of social media, it's great for connecting people. It has been great at giving people the information they need to be able to make the choices they can to become vegan, for example. I think there are some very negative sides to it in creating this division of us versus them, and also for taking things out of context as well. And I personally think it allows people, like I said before, with politics, to stay within their echo chambers. And when we do that, we create camps. And unless we're able to get out of these ideas and to be able to meet people where they are, then there's never going to be any progress. So social media is useful for connecting people. But on the other hand, we need to get off the computer and maybe out in the streets and talking to each other.
That leads on quite nicely to talking about identity, actually, there. You mentioned camps, and certainly both on talking of, if you talk of being a farmer, I've had this conversation actually with quite a lot of farmers and non-farmers about what it means to be a farmer. Similarly, if you say the term vegan or you say the term animal rights, or these are all very loaded terms. And I think it can't help but becoming whatever you identify as. You're identifying with a certain set of labels. Do you think that's useful or not?
I don't think labels myself personally. I'm talking from my own personal opinion here. Very useful. The reason why I absolutely love Animal Rebellion's stance is because we don't use the term animal rights anymore, because it's loaded. Because we want people to be, we want to be accessible to everyone. We don't use the term, for example, we use animal justice, as we talked about before. We don't call ourselves activists. We're just ordinary people. because that's what it mainly is. It's mainly ordinary people who are just concerned about what will happen to their children's future. I think what you're touching on here is the idea of identity. And identity can be useful. It can be very difficult when you're trying to make progress. And that's something that we as Animal Rebellion have encountered. I think it's very easy to allow something to become your identity, and you're so attached to it that it becomes your story, and yep, you're not able to see other people's stories and where they're coming from. And I think that's a very big trap you can fall into as an animal rights activist, say. And we ourselves as Animal Rebellion, we are also criticized by other animal rights activists for not being ideologically pure enough, for example.
Yep. Yeah.
So we have it from both sides. We have the farmers and the animal rights activists. I think that it definitely does become an identity when all you do is identify with those same people and that same story. What I would advise everyone to do is just to be able to talk to each other. Get off the computer and talk to each other. Go to the farms and talk to the farmers. Okay, well, maybe we won't agree. And I myself have done it personally. I've been out to talk to farmers. I don't agree with the act, but I love the person. It's not easy job. You can live with quite a lot of isolation. The suicide rates are quite high for farmers. When I put myself into the shoes of that person, then I can't have any hate. I can only understand the situation. Change is scary. And that's why with my work, what I want to do is I want to go to where the farmers are. I want to say, look, I understand what you're going through. Let's try and work together and come up with a solution together that is better for everyone involved.
What drives you to campaign as you do? Why do you actually do this? How does it make you feel doing what you do?
A lot of different emotions. You feel everything. Sometimes there's victory, sometimes there's defeat, sometimes there's sadness, sometimes there's frustration. Change is very slow sometimes. I don't do it because I believe that I want to see solid achievements. I have this goal and I want to achieve it. I do this because I believe it's right, because I feel justice for animals, the animals that I've had the pleasure and the honour of being around, the joy I've got from living with non-human animals. I think the justice that we need in the world to be able to make the world better, not just for them, but also for us and for our future generations, is what drives me. I feel very privileged. I came from quite a working class background. I've had to work very hard to get to where I am. But because now where I am, I have somewhat of an ability to be able to spend a lot of free time doing this. I'm in a privileged position to be able to give back and to be able to do as much as I can to create a better world for all of us. But as I say, you can't give yourself a fixed goal. You can't say to yourself, oh, we're going to achieve animal justice next year. Because you'll be constantly thinking just about that target. And sometimes you can't see what impacts you're going to make in the future. I don't know that something I said or something I did last week sparked something in someone else's mind, and that seed has been planted and then will come to fruition later on. You can't judge your impact solely by what's happening at the moment. You have to let history take its course.
Do you see a stage of dairy alternative products seriously taking over from dairy products in terms of the conventional consumer mindset and what consumers are actually buying off the shelf?
Yes. And the reason why is because that change is already underway. When we think about the downward trend in milk prices, if we think about the increase that's happening when it comes to plant-based milk, the expanding market, as I said before, last year a study showed that 25% of adults are drinking plant-based milks. When I've seen, just personally, I've seen the strides that have been made with vegan cheeses and plant-based milks. When we've seen the scientists are coming out showing that the nutritional values, the health benefits that come along with these products, I think it's only a matter of time.
If dairy or livestock farming in general were to disappear, say, what would be the impact on the landscape? And surely a country that has plentiful amounts of grass, for example, has a duty to make best use of it.
Yes, but that grass doesn't need to be eaten by animals. What we need is reforestation. We need rewilding. We need forest gardens. We need to be able to capture carbon. And I know that there's a lot that's been said about regenerative agriculture, regenerative grazing.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, when you do look at the most comprehensive study when it comes to regenerative grazing, there is absolutely no way that using animals, who are always going to be net contributors to global greenhouse gas emissions, can actually sequester enough carbon over a sustained period of time to be more, a better solution than just allowing the land to rewild itself. Because as I say, change is difficult. I understand why livestock farmers have a need to be able to justify continuing. But in the face of this climate emergency, when we need to take robust action now, I don't think we can just allow these industries to continue for the sake of tradition. We don't say that about oil. We don't worry about the fact that we have traditionally been using oil for so many years. To say that just because that's a livestock farmer, it makes no sense. We can't allow these industries to continue being net contributors to climate change when we have a solution at hand now that we could be helping farmers move towards.
So you've been mainly talking about a long-term vision, a long-term campaign, but I want to sort of talk about the immediate future. And if you had a vision for UK dairy for the next 10 years or so, what would it be?
It's excellent that the dairy industry is recognising that they need to be able to take action, that they do have an impact on climate change. What we're saying is that no matter what they try to do, by using animals is never going to create the same kind of benefits as if we just remove the animal itself. So I think the dairy industry has to come to that realization, and we're hoping they come to the realization sooner rather than later, that the demand for dairy is decreasing, the profitability of dairy is decreasing, the environmental impact will never be able to be as good as if we went plant-based. And hopefully the dairy industry will start to help farmers themselves, will start to engage more with us to be able to come to that golden stage where we don't use dairy anymore.
Finally, if you want to give a message, send a message to any dairy farmers who are listening out there, what would it be?
Well, my message is that I know change is scary, and I really do admire how difficult the industry is for you, how hard you work and how much pride you take in feeding the nation. But changes are happening. People's minds are shifting. And you yourselves, I'm sure you love your animals too. That's not what we think. We don't think you hate your animals. But what we want is we want you to come to us and we'll help you move to a solution that's better for everyone. And together we can solve these problems. But we're not your enemy and we mean you no harm.
Kerry Waters, thank you very much. It's been really great having you on the podcast.
Thank you. No, it's been great talking to you.
And that's it for this mini-series on change in dairy. I hope you got something out of it, and it's given you some things to think about. Certainly has me. I'm hoping to do more of these mini-series in future on the podcast, so please do send me any feedback that you might have, positive or otherwise, and I'll build on that for going forwards. Next time, we're back to normal on the podcast, and I'll be heading to Norfolk to speak to arable and beef farmer Jeremy Buxton. So I hope you can join me then. Don't forget, you can subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen. That really, really helps, so please do. And you can also now follow the podcast on Twitter at @MTF_podcast, or just search for Meet the Farmers podcast on Twitter. Thank you very much for listening to this episode and the other episodes in this mini series. I look forward to joining me next time.